gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So we continue talking about devotional service and how to discharge devotional service. So Om Ganat Timananda Shaganjana Shulakaya Chakshur and Miditam Yena Tasmai Shikadavai Namaha. So we were reading about the different items that are important in devotional service. And actually, altogether, there's 64, but we're taking them one by one. So the next important items are as follows. One should decorate the body with tilak, which is the sign of the Vaishnavas. And Prabhupada says, the idea is that as soon as a person sees these marks on the body of the Vaishnava, he will immediately remember Krishna. Lord Chaitanya said that a Vaishnava is he who, when seen, reminds one of Krishna. Therefore, it is essential that a Vaishnava mark his body with tilak to remind others of Krishna. So, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would consider that anyone who didn't have tilak on his forehead would be like a slaughterhouse. This is his comment. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said the same thing. Each and every Vaishnava Sampradaya has a different type of tilak. Like if many of you have seen the Ramanuja Sampradaya, and there's very wide tilak there. But they all have tilak. And of course, the Shaivites have a different type of tilak. It's a horizontal tilak. We should not wear that tilak. And in some Sampradayas, and actually even previously in our Sampradaya, not only do they have tilak on the body, but they branded a devotee at the time of initiation. They would take a very hot iron. This would be part of your initiation ceremony. And also it tested to see whether you were on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Because they would take the hot iron with a brand, like the symbols of Vishnu actually, put it in there, and then they say, get ready for initiation. Boom. And then you'd be branded for life. So, of course, nowadays, people like to put different things called tattoos on their body. And this does not remind one of Krishna. And actually, devotees should not put tattoos of Krishna on the body because when they go to the toilet, they're taking pictures of Krishna with them. This is one thing that we learned when we first joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, that pictures of Krishna are sacred. One of the first things we learned. So you don't like put a picture on the ground. And certainly you wouldn't bring a picture of Krishna into the toilet. That's not a very good idea. So you can have the tilak markings or the symbols of Vishnu, you know, that are branded into your body, but no pictures of Krishna. And nowadays it's become very popular to have these things permanently on one's body. You know, this is not a very good idea. And there was one devotee who had, he joined the movement, he had a tattoo of his girlfriend on the body. It was on his arm. You know, and so what he did, you know, he was very intelligent, he changed it into Krishna. You know, his girlfriend, like a threefold bending form. His girlfriend, so he put a dodia and put a flute in her hand. It became Krishna. Anyway, I know it's popular nowadays to have these tattoos, but it's better not. Better not. So, in number two, in marking such tilak, one may sometimes write Hare Krishna on the body. And in India, they have these stamps. You can just stamp Hare Krishna in the Devanagari on your body. Number three is one should accept flowers and garlands that have been offered to the deity and the spiritual master and put them on one's body. That purifies the body. Four, one should learn to dance before the deity. And of course, the dancing, this is very interesting, the dancing should be done for the pleasure of the deities. Not that we have a, what do they call, mosh pit? You know what a mosh pit is?
Yeah.
Now that, you know, sometimes you see that, devotee is like, it's almost like that. That, remember, Krishna's there. And, you know, Prabhupada taught us how to dance. And, of course, there's going to be other styles of dancing, too. But still, we should understand the deities, we're doing it for the deities' pleasure. Not like, you know, not our own pleasure. And it's not, you know, a new style of dancing. So one should learn to bow down immediately upon seeing the deity or the spiritual master. And of course, bowing down means you also say your pranam mantras at the same time. Like Prabhupada would say to Shrutakirti when he would just like bow down and he would just get up immediately, Prabhupada would get disturbed with him. He says, what is that? Just like chopping technique or something like that. And you'd simply go down and get up. So we should say pranam mantra. The pranam mantras are meant to be said so loudly, not super loudly, but at least so you can hear, not just softly. Number six, as soon as one visits a temple of Lord Krishna, one must stand up. First you offer obeisances, and then you stand up like that to respect the deity. Seven, when the deity is being borne for a stroll in the street, a devotee should immediately follow the procession. In this connection, it may be noted that in India, especially in Vishnu temples, the system is that apart from the big deity who is permanently situated in the main area of the temple, there is a set of smaller deities which are taken in procession in the evening. In some temples, it is common to hold a big procession in the evening with a band playing and a nice big umbrella over the deities who sit on decorated thrones on the cart or palanquin, which is carried by devotees. The deities come out onto the street and travel in the neighborhood while the people of the neighborhood come out to offer prasad. The residents of the neighborhood all follow the procession, so it is a very nice scene. When the deity is coming out, the servitors in the temple put forward the daily accounts before them. So much was the collection, so much was the expenditure. The whole idea is that the deity is considered to be the proprietor of the whole establishment, and all the priests and other people taking care of the temple are considered to be the servants of the deity. This system is very, very old and is still followed, so therefore it is mentioned here that when the deity is on stroll, the people should follow behind. So we've been in South India where they do this procedure, and it's quite wonderful. And sometimes the palanquin, each piece of wood that's holding the palanquin is like about this big. And it takes like 10 men to hold each side of the palanquin. And what they do with the deity is called the Utsava Murti. There's the Mula. Mula means the root deity, and which is the big deity that's in the temple. And sometimes the deity is so big, in Srirangam and other places, the deity would actually cover all the way from this wall to that wall. He's lying down. Sometimes very, very big deity. So that's the Mula deity. And then the Utsava, or festival deity, Utsava means festival, they take out on the street every day, and not only on the street, they take the deity to people's homes, the Brahmins' homes, and they set the deity up on the altar in the Brahmins' home, and everybody is offering food and different things to the deity. It's a very wonderful procedure. And then they bring the deity back. And it's accompanied by these gongs and everything like that when they go out. It's quite wonderful. In the Krishna Consciousness Movement, as we establish communities, we should start doing things like that, taking the deities to people's homes. And also, in the beginning days of the movement, the devotees used to do things like showing the accounts to the deities. You know, how much money was spent, how much money was taken in. And in addition, every week, I remember the first time I visited a temple, 1969, in Boston, the devotees would go to the deities, it was once a week, and tell the deities what they did during the week and what they didn't do. You know, what they did, were supposed to do and didn't do, and what they did, and they would just reveal their mind to the deity, because Krishna is there. You know, sometimes we forget, we think the deity is just, well, we shouldn't think the deity is just a statue, but sometimes we think it's just a ritual that we do, you know. But actually, Krishna is directly there, and we should approach the deity, reveal our mind to the deity, and tell the deity what we did and what we didn't do. So anyway, so these are some of the things that were done previously in ISKCON. And also, we used to take in New York, we used to take Radha Govinda, small Radha Govinda Utsava Murtis, out to Central Park. Central Park is this big park in the middle of New York. I think it's one of the biggest parks and cities in the world. And devotees would have continual artis and offerings to the deities, and people would gather around and we'd distribute prasad. In other words, we'd offer bhoga, and then be like 500 people watching, you know, not devotees, but people who weren't devotees watching, and they were just like amazed seeing the devotees dancing and chanting in front of the deity. It was like almost like a Rath Yatra every Sunday. And it was quite wonderful. It was quite wonderful. So that's what the small deity is meant for, or he is meant for, to take him out. He doesn't want to sit just on the altar. He gets bored. So, that's the point. I mean, just to have a small deity on the altar is not the point, but to actually take him out, if possible, on a daily basis. And, of course, then in ISKCON, the early days, we had the Radha Damodar deities, which are now in a place called Gita Nagari, that were taken out even to state fairs. You know, in America, we have this thing, every state has a big fair in the fall or during the summer where hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people come. And so we would rent a booth in the fair, as Vishnu John Maharaj and other people would rent a booth in the fair and just set up Radha Damodar in front of everybody and have continual arties. And people really got attracted. You know, sometimes we think, you know, what are people going to think when they see the deity? But the deity is very attractive. There is that injunction, one's not supposed to worship the deity in front of non-devotees, but Prabhupada said for the purpose of preaching, we can take that risk. Just like we were explaining even the details about chanting Hare Krishna by distributing Srila Prabhupada's books to people who were envious, and that's sometimes considered an offensive to explain that, you know, according to the 10 offenses on chanting. But for the sake of preaching, we take that risk. It's a higher principle. So the next one is, a devotee must visit a Vishnu temple at least once or twice every day, morning and evening. In Vrindavan, the system is followed very strictly. All the devotees in town go every morning and evening to visit temples. Therefore, during these times, there are considerable crowds all over the city. There are about 5,000 temples in Vrindavan city. Of course, it is not possible to visit all the temples, 5,000 temples, but there are at least one dozen very big and important temples which were started by the Goswamis and which should be visited. So, hearing this, I remember Jaipur. There's a city in India called Jaipur. Jaipur means the city of victory. And the reason it's called the city of victory is because the deities were taken there when the Muslims attacked in other places, and the Muslims were not able to defeat the Rajputs. The Rajputs are actually very strong people in India. I don't know if any of you know what a Rajput is. Some of you may know. But they're like Kshatriyas to the max. And they would rather die than lose a battle. I mean, definitely like the old-time Kshatriyas. And sometimes they get angry. I was speaking to one Rajput once, and I had to disagree with him, and he said, if you weren't a sannyasi, I'd kill you. I said, thank God I took sannyasi. Anyway, so that's why it's called Jaipur. Nobody could defeat the Rajputs. So anyway, so every day in Jaipur, they're the deities Radha Govindaji, which were taken from Vrindavan, of course, when the Muslims attacked. And guess what? Everybody in the city, it's a regulated principle, has to come out and get the blessings of the deity. And it's quite wonderful to watch that in the morning, how everybody's coming in there chanting, go, anybody been there? Anybody?
Yeah.
They chant, Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. And the whole city circumambulates the deity. That's the culture. I mean, nowadays you have people who live, I don't want to comment on anything here, but I've experienced in America, people live right next to the temple, and they may not see the deity for 2 weeks. And they only come when there's a big feast. To them, the Sunday feast means just eating, no Krishna Katha, right? Yeah. So, I mean, I'd be scared if I was living right next to a temple and I didn't take the blessings of the deity every day. I mean, obviously, if you're a half hour away, like some of you live, that's okay. But if you're living right there in the temple, isn't it Tilakini? And you don't come to see Krishna, oh my God, what is your consciousness like? Then maybe you have hellish consciousness, because it says that those who think the spiritual master is an ordinary man, and those who think the deity is made of stone or wood or something like that, they're possessed of hellish intelligence. So, you know, if you actually believe God was there, you'd go to see him, right? That means you may not believe God is there. It's a test of your faith, right? Like if I told you, I mean, even if I told you that there was some famous person like a half a kilometer from here, you'd all rush there. If I told you, you know, what, Bill Gates, or who's a famous person? Krishna. No, but not in the material world. Who's a famous, you know, some Bollywood star, like, you know, Ronnie Mukherjee, you know, or
Richard Brand,
okay. I don't even know who that is. Or the Terminator or something like that. Like, he was just, like, down the block. I mean, you wouldn't just sit here, you'd all run out of Bhagavatam class. But we are so materially contaminated that even though God is there, we don't go to see him. It's really interesting. It reminds me of the time when I was GBC in Hawaii, and I was giving Bhagavatam class, and the deities were there. And I asked, where is everybody? I was the only one in Bhagavatam class. And the devotee, and one devotee who remained, said, it surfaces up. So instead of seeing God, they were out surfing, or as Prabhupada said, suffering. You know, trying to catch the best wave in the material ocean. So, you know, we have to have this faith. You know, if you have that faith, Yasya Devi Pura Bhakti Yuta Devi Takuru Tashai Tekatada Yarta Prakashan Te Mahamana, then everything's revealed to you. Krishna is there. Like Prabhupada said when he was installing the deities in Los Angeles, he was crying. He said, you have to understand you're directly dealing with Krishna. Sakshad Vrajendra Nandana. I mean, so that's the deity. It's not just a ritual. But anyway, enough on that point. 9. One must circumambulate the temple building at least 3 times. That in every temple there's an arrangement to go around the temple at least 3 times. Some devotees go around more than 3 times, 10 times, 15 times, according to their vows. The Goswamis used to circumambulate Govardhan Hill. One should also circumambulate the whole Vrindavan area. So I remember when I was with Prabhupada in Mayapur, every morning Prabhupada would circumambulate the deities. Not only circumambulate, there'd be a big kirtan around Prabhupada. There's some videos of this. And everyone would be jumping up and down in front of Prabhupada. And of course, they do that now. They have a small murti of Prabhupada that's brought around. But that Prabhupada did that every morning in Vrindavan and also in Mayapur. And Prabhupada, even in his final days, he was asking to circumambulate Govardhan Hill. And of course, the devotees didn't want to take him because they were afraid that he was going to leave his body. He wanted to go on an ox cart. So this idea of circumambulation of parikrama is actually very important. And then another thing about parikrama, that many devotees go barefoot around Govardhan. Prabhupada, this may come as a shock, when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan with the devotees, he would chastise them for walking around barefoot. And Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't go barefoot, and the people would criticize him, and he said, my feet are meant for serving Krishna. So, anyway, I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't go barefoot. At the same time, you have to take care of your health. I had several devotees almost die from toxic shock because they stepped into some, any poop, as you say, human stuff. And then Ravindra Sarupa almost died of toxic shock, and he went to the hospital and had to spend like 2 days in a coma. So you have to be very careful. If you do go barefoot, you have to be very careful. But Prabhupada didn't go barefoot. It's interesting, isn't it? And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't do. So sometimes they say that one tries to become more religious than the Pope. You understand? You know, I'm better than Prabhupada. I did something Prabhupada didn't do. But take care of this body. It belongs to Krishna. So, 10. One must offer the deity in the temple according to the regulated principles. That means offering arti and boga and decorating the deity, etc. These things must be observed regularly. Prabhupada said, in deity worship, 2 things are most important, punctuality and cleanliness. The 3rd thing is nice boga. But punctuality is number 1. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to Jagannath Puri, he actually regulated the deity worship to extreme punctuality. You know, previously in Jagannath Puri, they were just very much into this spontaneous stuff. And, of course, sometimes the deity likes that too, but there's an interesting story with Sripad Ramanujacharya. When Ramanujacharya went to Jagannath Puri, he tried to regulate the deity worship, and the deities kicked him out of Jagannath Puri. That story is there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He just, like, they transported him through the air to Kurukshetra. Has anyone heard, remember that story? They transported him through the air, and he woke up in Kurukshetra. He didn't understand it was a Vishnu temple. And he got upset, and he was fasting, but then he understood it was Lord Kurmadev. That temple is very nice. They actually have a whole garden with turtles in it, where they take care of turtles. Some of you have been there. Manamangal was there with me. And that's Kurukshetra. So anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur regulated the deity worship and also made sure that the king wasn't stealing from the hundi or the donation box. And the king was doing that. And what happened is Bhaktivinoda Thakur made the king spend all of that money to worship the deity, and the king got so upset he wanted to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so he did a sacrifice that lasted 1 month with 50 brahmanas to try to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Instead, the king's own son died. So if you try to kill a Vaishnava, it'll come back to you. So anyway, so things must be very... I remember when I first opened one of our temples, I would stand there with a watch and actually count down, you know, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. Okay, blow the conch. And everything was extremely regulated. So cleanliness and punctuality and nice boga offerings. And then after that you have the opulent clothes and everything like that that comes after that point. Also with deity worship, the best thing is that the devotees themselves make the clothes for the deities. I mean, second best is buying clothes in Vrindavan. And you don't know who's making. Sometimes it's a nice Muslim ladies who are sewing the clothes. But it's better that the devotees do it because it's bhakti at that point. Then when you pay for something, it's not bhakti anymore. You know, if you pay for someone to sew clothes, it's not bhakti. But when a devotee renders that service, just like what we do sometimes in the United States, at least the temple I'm in, we get the cloth, of course, from India. And then we pass it out to various congregation members who do the beading on it. Do you ever do that here? Yeah, it's a very nice system. And then now we're going to buy this a professional machine that actually does embroidery. It has 15 threads in it. You ever seen these machines?
I was showing you.
It's 15 threads and actually you can do lotuses and conches and everything like that. So that's our next process to please the deities. One must render personal service to the deities. 12. One must sing. Of course, Krishna conscious songs. Then you just sing your latest top of the pops or something like so. For the deities. One must perform sankirtan. Wow. That includes book distribution, also chanting in front of the deities. The word sankirtan basically means congregational chanting and also absorbed chanting, completely absorbed chanting. One must chant. So there's so much about chanting here. 15, one must offer prayers. In other words, when you go before the deities, you should have some sort of sankalpa. Sankalpa means what you want. And hopefully it's something spiritual. And you can dovetail, whatever your desires are, spiritual desires, in terms of the prayers. Like what I find is when I'm praying, every day it's different. Sometimes I pray for a particular individual, please save that person. Sometimes I pray for empowerment and Krishna consciousness. Sometimes I pray that people will accept Krishna consciousness. And sometimes I pray that, a fallen devotee will again come back to Krishna consciousness. So we should always have something. It's not that we just stand there like that. It should be we ask something from the deities. Prayer means you're imploring the deities to help in a certain way, either help you or help others. 16, one must recite notable prayers. Notable prayers means prayers that have been recited by past acharyas, like songs that we have, like the song Gopinath. I mean, there's so many songs by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottamadas Thakur. Last night we chanted some songs by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. But those are notable prayers. 17. One must taste Mahaprasad, food from the very plate offered before the deities. Prabhupada also said you don't take the Mahaprasad and mix it with everything else. It's supposed to be kept separate and passed out to the devotees. And Mahaprasad also includes things that are not sweet. Although most devotees are of the conception that only sweets are Mahaprasad, right? So, you know, if someone offers you like bitter melon that was offered to the deities, that has the same potency as Glubjamins. So, 18, one must drink Charanamrita, water from the bathing of the deities, which is offered to guests. So the Charanamrita is mixed with a little sugar. I remember one time in the temple, I think it was there, where there was one lady who mixed salt with the Charanamrita. And Prabhupada took it. And Prabhupada looked and said, who has done this? And the girl didn't know what to do. She was just giggling. Prabhupada was really upset. And of course, taking Charanamrita doesn't mean you have to drink the whole bowl. When I was a brahmachari, I really used to like sweets. So to me, Charanamrita meant, you know, pouring into a cup and drinking it. But if you take one drop, that's enough. Save it for the other devotees. It's not just an excuse to eat more sweets. So 19, one must smell the incense and flowers offered to the deity. 20, one must touch the lotus feet of the deity. That is, if you are initiated and on the altar. Also, there's some controversy about whether you can see Radharani's feet on Radhastami. What do you do here? Mm-hmm. Good. And I was in Sydney, and we were doing the Abhishek for the deities on Radhastami. And the devotee said, we can't show the deity's feet. And I was explaining to them, well, we're giving Radharani a bath in front of everybody else. You know, the little deity can see the feet, and you're giving a bath, so certainly you should see her feet on the big deity, but they didn't listen. So, 21. One must see the deity with great devotion. In other words, how can I please you? 22. One must offer arti at different times. 23. One must hear about the Lord and his pastimes from Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar books. 24. One must pray to the deity for his mercy. So this is an imperative. One must pray. So Krishna consciousness, in Krishna consciousness, we do pray. Vananam. It's one of the nine processes of devotional service. Oftentimes the devotees don't do that. You know, you ask a devotee, do you pray? And you just say, well, I just chant Hare Krishna. But we should actually pray for Krishna's mercy. Please save me from this material world. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur does. And it's just thinking of the one prayer, Gopinath. You know, Gopinath, I'm a materialistic rascal. Please take this sinner weeping and weeping to your lotus feet. So we should pray like that, because unfortunately we don't realize we're materialistic rascals. We think, oh, Gopinath, I'm such a great devotee. Please recognize me. Instead of please take this sinner weeping and weeping to your lotus feet, you know, we're thinking, you know, Gopinath, you're very fortunate to have me. I mean, we're so proud. But you have someone like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is not an absolutely pure devotee, but not at all proud of his position. 25, one should remember the deity. 26, one should meditate upon the deity. Whew, all these things about the deity. 27, one should render some voluntary service. That means apart from your regulated schedule, you do some things spontaneously or voluntary. 28. One should think of the Lord as one's friend. Doesn't mean you go up and you put your arm around him. But it's like Krishna says in the fifth chapter of the Gita, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokamaheshram Suvardam Sarvabhutanam Ketvamam Shantim Richati. That Krishna is your friend. He's protecting you. That'll make you peaceful, because that's the peace formula 529 in the Gita. That the Lord is the enjoyer, he's the enjoyer of all the sacrifice, Bhaktam Jagatapasam, he's the Lord of all the worlds, Sarva Lokamaheshram, and he's the friend of all of us, Suvardam Sarva Bhutanam. He's a real friend. Surit means more than just an ordinary friend. There's actually two words. There's Mitra and Surit for friend in Sanskrit. Mitra is like an ordinary friend. You know, let's go play pool or something like that. You know, or some game like that. Or soccer. That's an ordinary friend. But Surit means basically good heart. Or someone who's actually in your heart. Or someone who is your well-wisher. Suridam Sarvabhutanam. So that's Krishna. So we should realize that Krishna is always with us and he's our best friend. 29. One should offer everything to the Lord. At least those things that are good for the Lord, not just your blue jeans. So 30. One should offer a favorite article such as food or a garment. And that's why the devotees offered blue jeans when they heard that one, you know. What's the favorite, you know. So for some of you, that may mean offering your iPhones to the deities. Or they had what one time they dressed these deities, Monkey Bihari and Vrindavan, and they gave him a mobile phone and sunglasses. So everything else, can you imagine, you know, Govindamati Purusham Tamaham Jami, and then all of a sudden there's Giridhari, you know, with designer sunglasses on and a mobile phone. You don't do that. Next one is, one should take all kinds of risks and perform all endeavors for Krishna's benefit. And that's, of course, what Prabhupada did in coming to the Western world. And also what the devotees who went to preach in Russia did. I remember some stories that, like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, for example, he had to basically live on different trains and jump from one train to the other to avoid being caught by the KGB. KGB is the Russian Secret Service. And he escaped. And Prabhupada was so pleased with him that Prabhupada actually did something he doesn't normally do. When he saw Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he just embraced him and basically said, you know, you have Krishna's full mercy. You know, so he probably didn't usually do that, you know, give a lot of people hugs. But he did that with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj when he heard about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj taking risks for Krishna's benefit. In the beginning days of the movement, we were all at least inclined towards doing that. Mm. It was a very adventurous time in Krishna consciousness. Like, I went to South America where, I mean, it wasn't the same risk as in Russia. But because I was in America, American, sometimes they would consider Americans to be members of the CIA. I remember one of my godbrothers was with us in Venezuela, and he went to the university campus, and the students immediately started chanting CIA, 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 which in Spanish means CIA, CIA, and they were running after him to kill him. So, but you know, we all took risks. You know, I went to places, went to South America. I didn't speak the language, and I learned on the spot to speak Spanish, or else I wouldn't have been able to eat. And we organized Sankirtan parties and opened up a whole continent. Myself and Rita Nandamaraj opened up a whole continent to Krishna consciousness in South America. And so that meant taking risks. So we should be ready to do that. In every condition, one should be a surrendered soul. That means whatever Krishna wants. 33, one should pour water on the Tulsi tree. It's obvious. 34, one should regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam and similar literature. 35, one should live in a sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwarka. We mentioned that yesterday. That doesn't mean you all leave. That means you stay here and you make your residence place a sacred place. That's all. Anywhere where Krishna's names are chanted is a sacred place and the regulated principles are being followed. 36, one should offer service to Vaishnavas or devotees. And that means all devotees, not just the spiritual master or advanced devotees. We should consider ourselves to be Gopi Bhartik, Padakamala, Dasa Dasa, Dasa Anudasa. And the more you removed you are in terms of servant of a servant of a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord, the more you please Krishna. You know, it's very easy to serve the spiritual master, but to serve a simple, humble Vaishnava who may be even less advanced than you or not so prominent, that really is a little harder, but Krishna becomes more pleased by that. And I gave the example to the devotees here. Some of you didn't hear this. The other day that I was, not the other day I was doing, but I gave the example the other day that when I was in Mayapur, there was one lady who was passing away. She was getting ready to pass away. Her name was Manarupa. And I every day, even in the middle of the GBC meetings, I would read to her for an hour from Chaitanya Charitamrita or the Krishna book or some literature like that. And I felt very blissful. I mean, that was the most blissful thing I did in Mayapur, even more blissful than the GBC meetings. that's hard to imagine. You know. So if you really want to get a taste for hearing and chanting, you serve the Vaishnavas. And of course, there's that story of Kalidas, which I mentioned the other day. Kalidas in Mayapur was actually taking the remnants of all the Vaishnavas, including the Vaishnavas who were Shudras. And they got the advantage of drinking the foot bathing water of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. 37. One should arrange one's devotional service according to one's means. 38. In the month of Kartik, October and November, one should make arrangements for special services. 39. During Janmasthami, the time of Krishna's appearance in the world, one should observe a special service. In other words, more service. 40. One should do whatever is done with great care and devotion for the deity. 41. One should relish the pleasure of Bhagavatam reading amongst devotees and not among outsiders. So, of course, professional Bhagavatam reciters, there's no benefit to that. Of course, the statement in the Hari Bhakti Shudaya is a Vaishnava Mukod Girnam Putam Kari Gatam Ritam Shravana Naiva Kartavyam Sarpa Jristiyatapayam. No one should hear about Krishna from a non-Vaishnava. It's like taking milk touched by the lips of a serpent. And so in India, of course, they have these professional Bhagwat reciters who do this Bhagwat Saptaha for 7 days. And generally, they're very good actors. They cry a lot. And all the women in front of them are crying with them. It's very interesting. I watched it one time, not the whole thing, but just for a few minutes. Like he was going, oh, Govinda, da, 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 da. And all the ladies, you know, ladies generally in front, they go, oh, Govinda, Govinda, Radha. It was like seeing a Bollywood movie. So we want to relish hearing from pure devotees. Prabhupada said, must be heard from the lips of a pure devotee. 42. One should associate with devotees who are considered more advanced. And other association means you ask them for advice in devotional service and you serve them. That principle of tadviti, pranipatena, pariprashnena sevya doesn't apply only to the spiritual master, it applies to more advanced devotees. Inquire submissively and render service. Because if you serve an advanced devotee, mahatsev mahurvi muktesh, you become Krishna conscious. That's the secret. Sadhusanga, sadhusanga, sarvasarshukhoi, lavamatra, sadhusanga, sarvasiddhihoi. By a little bit of association, you achieve all perfection. So 43, one should chant the holy name of the Lord. I don't think we need to explain that one. 44, one should live in the jurisdiction of Mathura. That's like living in a holy place. Now, Prabhupada explains, the total regulative principles come to an aggregate of 64 items, as we mentioned. The first are the primary 10 regulated principles, then come the secondary 10 principles, and added to these are 44 other activities. So altogether, there are 64 items for discharging the regulative practice of devotional service. Out of these 64 items, 5 items are very important, namely worshipping the deity, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating among the devotees, Sankirtan, and living in Mathura, which is a holy place, are very important, Prabhupada said. So these 5 items are essential. That, and of course, the deity can also be a picture of the Panchatattva. When I first joined the movement, it's not. First of all, Prabhupada really wanted people to concentrate on the temple deity and not have so many deities in their own homes. And of course, what can I do? It happens. But Prabhupada wanted, he said, a first class household, talking about householders, some of you are brahmacharis, but a first-class householder is someone who worships the deity in the temple. Second class lives some distance away, has his own deities, and third class lives very far away. So, you know, we should be at least second class, you know, have our deities, but go to the temple regularly. Anyway, so worshiping the deity, you know, when I joined the movement, we just had a picture of the Panchatattva on the altar, and it was ecstatic. That's a deity. And I was made the head pujari after 2 days of joining the Krishna Conscious Movement. And that was ecstatic too. And I was sent on Sankirtan the first day I joined the Hare Krishna Movement. And that was ecstatic, but it was a little traumatic in the beginning. So. I joined the movement, and the temple president, who was Fridananda, wasn't Maharaj, but he was married at that time. He told me, he said, join the movement, you can be the treasurer. And I thought, oh, that's very nice. Something, you know, something very easy to do. So he gave me the treasury, which was a closet, basically. And we had like $5 in the treasury. So I counted the money, and he said, now you're going on second time. I said, I'm the treasurer. He says, there's nothing else to count, so you better go on Sankirtan. You better go on Sankirtan to make some money for the treasury. That's the treasurer's business. So first day I joined the movement, I was out there in my dhoti, because in those days we didn't wear Western clothes when we were distributing books. So out there in my dhoti, you know, in my hometown, scared that my friends would drive by and see me in a dhoti. So I just duck into the storefronts, you know, like whenever a car came by. So, anyway, I learned not to be shy. Before I joined the movement, I was extremely shy. But by going on Sankirtan, I cured myself. So, Krishna cured me. The 64 items of devotional service should include all of our activities of the body, mind, and speech. As stated in the beginning, the regulated principles of devotional service enjoins that all of our senses must be employed in the service of the Lord. Like Savaimanat Krishna Padara Vindayo. Exactly how they are thus employed is described in the above 64 items. Now, Srila Rupa Goswami gives evidence from different scriptures supporting the authenticity of many of these points. Okay, any questions? Comments? Yes.
Thank you, Mark. I was wondering if you could please talk about japa.
Japa. Okay. What do you want to know about japa?
We had different statements, like we should just hear attentively, and Prabhupada said we should chant like a child calling for his mother.
Yeah. That statement by Prabhupada is from the Shikshastika, actually. Isn't it? Which verse? Does anyone know? Ai? Tanuja Kinkuram Patita Mam Vishme Bhavam Mudo Kripya Tapa Pada Pankaja Stita Du Lisa Drasama Chintia. Oh, my dear Lord, O son of Nanda Maharaj, or dearmost Nanda Maharaj, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other I have fallen into this horrible ocean of birth and death. Please fix me up as one of the animals at your lotus feet. So in other words, that's the crying. We're crying to Krishna, you know, help, help. But unfortunately, we're drowning, but we don't know it in the ocean of material existence. And so we think, you know, like it was funny. Like Prabhupada, I was listening to Prabhupada one time. Well, I was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was giving a class in Los Angeles. He was quoting this one book that was very popular in those days, a book on transactional analysis. And the name of the book was I'm Okay, You're Okay. And, of course, that's very similar to Yatama Tatupad. So Prabhupada said, we say, I'm okay, you're not okay. We were talking to people. Anyway, so. But we should also be humble enough to understand we are not okay. So that's one way that one can be attentive when they're chanting, you know, help, help, Krishna. Rakshamam, Pahimam. You know, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Rakshamam, Pahimam. So that's one way. I mean, as far as other ways to be attentive, one really has to chant with one's heart, because devotional service, Srila Prabhupada said, is executed with the subtle body. You know, the gross body is doing things, but your gross body can be doing something and your mind can be somewhere else. And you are wherever your mind is. You know, your mind can be like enjoying in the beach here, at the same time you're chanting japa. And what are you actually doing? You're on the beach, you're not chanting japa. Because the gross, you know, you can put your body on automatic. You understand? Just like nowadays they have the airplanes, you can just put on autopilot. So many of us put our japa on autopilot. And so we just, Hare Krishna, wake me up when my rounds are done. You ever hear that statement? Wake me up when I finish my rounds. So, or like Prabhupada jokingly one time said he was chanting japa and moving the counter beads down, and then he moved the last one down. And he said, now I finished 16 rounds, I can do any damn thing. So usually we're chanting to get it done, which is not a good attitude. So what I suggest to the devotees, I mean, there's many japa seminars and workshops that devotees have done, but what I usually suggest to the devotees is before you chant, figure out what your sankalpa is. Figure out why you're chanting. You know, and it may be different each day for you or anyone. Like we were talking about prayers before. Like one day you're praying for someone else, another day you're praying for yourself. I mean, sometimes I'm chanting japa and I'm praying for the benefit of someone else. But before I chant, I figure, you know, why am I chanting japa today? What's my intention? That's a sankalpa. What's the reason? Ask yourself that question. And you have to give yourself a reason. If the reason is I just have to, that's not a good reason. If you have to do something, then figure out some other reason. Because having to do is a very bad consciousness. You know, like if you're cooking for the deities or going and saying, I have to go on Sankirtan today. I mean, it's really miserable to think what. Then that your life becomes miserable if you're doing things because you have to. You should always be rephrasing that in terms of, I choose to do it. I'm choosing to do this. Why? Because I want to please my spiritual master. I mean, that's another reason for chanting japa. It pleases my spiritual master when I chant my japa. Or it pleases Krishna. Or it saves me from these anarthas that are really destroying me. You know, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy. You know, just, I remember in the early days, it's funny, that whenever a brahmachari would see a woman, he'd just start going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So, I mean, that's a good reason to chant. Save me, Krishna! Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! And then, you know, recently when I've been driving with in the car with certain people, my chanting has actually improved too, because I was driving with Prananath yesterday, and he has this habit of just like, when he stops behind a car in front of him, it's just like, this close. You notice that?
Yeah, I saw that.
And so I was going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So, I mean, that's a good reason to chant, Krishna saved me. Yeah, there's many drivers like that. Well, there's another devotee here in New Zealand who's bought these really expensive sports cars, Nimananda. So, and he imports them with like a V20 engine. You know, that. So every time he starts off from a red light, it's boom. Especially his son drives like that. He says, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So, and it's interesting, when there's an emotional component to chanting, you chant better. Either it's fear, or you want something. Like Dhruva Maharaj, I mean, he had an emotional component. He really wanted a kingdom better than that of basically, well, better than Lord Brahma, basically. I mean, Dhruva Maharaj really wanted a good kingdom. You know, he wanted it, not just to sit on the lap of his father, but he wanted a kingdom. And so he chanted, you know, really enthusiastically. So, because he had a sankalpa, he had a reason. I'm not saying that we should be chanting like that. You know, just chanting, you know, I want a better car, you know. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. The Sankirtan vehicle is broken. Hare Krishna. Please provide a Mercedes van. Hare Krishna. But, you know, at least it should be something spiritual. So figure out why you're chanting. That's my answer to your question. And focus your chanting as a prayer. And that way you'll hear the holy names. Because unless there's the emotional component, you won't hear. If you're just trying to hear without a reason, you won't hear. If you go to this, I have to, supposed to, it doesn't work. there has to be some personal reason, and then you're able to hear. Then it becomes very easy. Actually, it's quite easy to hear at that point. What is your reason for chanting? Okay, empower me to distribute books, like many of you go on book distribution. Empower me to distribute books. Hare Krishna, please give me the empowerment, Krishna. So that's a personal reason. It's very nice. Any other questions or comments?
Sometimes this also works. Hare Krishna, yeah. When Maharaj was telling us, when he was in India,
yeah,
and he was walking on the street, and a lady was holding one bull, grazing. Bull saw his clothes, you know, when he sent us the clothes.
Ran after him.
And really go for him. And he said, Hare Krishna, very loudly. And this bull missed him and went away. See? So that works in different ways as well.
Yeah. Yeah, but don't... Don't trust on it. I mean, I was circumambulating Govardhan Hill one time, and a bull was chasing me, and I chanted like that, and the bull went faster. So I jumped over a fence, and the Brajavasis were all laughing at me. They said, don't you have faith in Krishna? And I said, yeah, I have faith. He gave me these legs. Yeah. So yeah, we chant, but, you know. Yeah, that we do other things, too, yeah. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Maharaj was wondering if you could comment on the principle of bowing down when you see the
spiritual master of deities.
And the deity. Is it every time?
What's well,
the details there?
You should ask, well, every time you see the deity, yes, obviously. You shouldn't, I mean, some devotees walk in the opposite direction so they don't have to go by the door of the temple room to see the deity. So they don't have to bow down at another time. You ever see people do that? That actually is an offense. But you have to, as far as your spiritual master, you have to ask, you know, what he requires. And at certain times, like if you're in the middle of some, you know, business or something, you know, in the airport, the spiritual master say, don't bow down, it looks a little weird here. So the main principle is the order of the spiritual master in that regard, as far as bowing down. And sannyasa, you're supposed to offer respect in the morning and in the evening, otherwise you've got to fast the whole day. I remember when I was a brahmachari and they were serving a sannyasi, and one time he thought I didn't offer obeisances. And he said, you got to fast. And he said, no, I did it when you weren't looking. So, you know, obeisances, according to time, place, and circumstance. I mean, if you're in a public place, sometimes it has to be like this. I mean, you just have to be practical. But, you know, we shouldn't be embarrassed about offering respect. I mean, even, like, see, the Muslims, they're not embarrassed about doing their, you know, five times a day, you know, they don't worry about it. So we shouldn't worry about it so much. I mean, obviously, we should be concerned with opinion, public opinion, too. So it's a balance. So ask the spiritual master or ask the deities. You know, what you want me to pay obeisances. But whenever I see the deities, I mean, I have my deities here, so whenever I see them, I offer obeisances. You know, so there's no harm. And actually, it's good exercise, too. Instead of doing push-ups all day long, you know, it's a transcendental way of doing push-ups, right? So, any other questions? Yeah.
Is there any specific reason why we have to, when we offer obeisance to the deities, facing from the left-hand side instead of the right?
Well, that's a ritual in India that the other way is for demigods. And, you know, one way is for the deities, for Vishnu Tattva, the other way. It's a ritual. I don't know the exact, you know, like logical reason for it, other than that it's a ritual. And then... it's interesting, when we offer obeisance to the Prabhupada always wanted us to offer obeisance in the same way we offer the deities, like Prabhupada on the left side. Or you can offer straight on, like that, but not the other direction. Not the other direction, not Prabhupada on your right side. So, you know, that was Prabhupada, that was the system Prabhupada taught us as far as offering obeisances to him. Does that make sense? Anyway, why each side? I don't know. You know, there's obviously some logical reason behind it, you know, about the body and everything like that. Maybe, you know, you have to speculate, which is interesting.
I think that they give blessings to the right hand, that's all.
Yeah, but what does that have to do? The spiritual master can bless your left hand side or your right hand side equally. I mean, I would actually like to have my right hand side blessed too. Your left hand side of your body is the logical part, and the right hand side is your emotional part. So I'd like to have my emotions blessed too. The mudra, you know, blessing. Ashiva, Ashiva. Blessings. So, any other questions? Because we're going to have to get ready to go. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, you know? Is it proper to, when you're chanting, can you offer as an offering for the welfare of other people?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, you can be praying for other people, sure. You know, not material welfare, you know. You know, I wish there was enough liquor and for everybody. But I mean, the spiritual welfare, yeah, I pray that this whole country will be Krishna conscious. You know, I pray that the world in Prabhupada's mission will be accomplished. I mean, devotees used to be so merciful that when we would go into a supermarket, we'd offer the whole supermarket. So then when we later on went shopping, we'd ask the devotees, is this supermarket offered? Because we wouldn't want to offer twice, obviously. So a devotee, that was compassion, isn't it? Prasadam supermarket, except for the meat, of course.
One more thing, Guru Maharaj, it's mentioned in Bhagavatam, the prasadam should be served in right hand.
Yes.
But many people, we have seen devotees, I have corrected quite a few here, even in this temple,
yeah,
serving with their left hand. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam.
Okay, sir, you give something to someone with your right hand, whether it's prasadam or anything else, that's the proper procedure. I mean, there's all sorts of things like that. The left hand is considered muchi. You can hold the pot with your left hand as you're taking the pot around. But, you know, the right hand should be, you know, offering things to people like that. That's just the proper procedure. Thank you for that. All right. I think we have to end now because we've got a lot to do.